Chapter 3. Wild Shape. There's a crunch of gravel as a car pulls into Rick's driveway, and Eddie starts freaking out. He didn't think about what to do if someone shows up. He has no plan. He's actually been refusing to think about anything except each moment in that moment. Because if he lets himself think about a moment ago, or a moment from now, he's gonna think about what happened before and after, and he cannot do that. So, right now is all he can focus on. Unfortunately, right now, someone is pulling into the driveway of what should be an abandoned house, which means that whoever they are, they're probably looking for Eddie. He hears voices outside, the sound of car doors slamming, and next to him, the wolf is nudging his arm, tugging on his vest like he wants Eddie to go welcome them in, but Eddie will not be talking to those people. No thank you. He climbs into the boat that Rick's obviously been using to store crap in more than he's been using to catch fish in, and waves the wolf up with him. He's not trusting his eyes right now because of reasons he won't be thinking about, but if he was, he'd think that the fucking wolf just rolled its eyes at him. But that would be crazy. As crazy as the other shit, nope, not thinking about it. And while he's not thinking about it, Eddie yanks the blue tarp over him and Strider just as someone jiggles the handle to the door. That he forgot to lock. God damn it. The blood in his ears is pulsing so hard that he can't make out what they're saying or who they even are. It's just voices and banging noises and the sound of his heartbeat throbbing inside his skull. Something taps against the bottom of the boat through the tarp about a foot to the right of his knee, then again higher. Shit. He clutches the beer bottle he'd brought in with him, and when the oar finally hits him through the tarp, he explodes out of it, breaking the bottle on the way and holding the sharp end to the neck of some kid. Huh? Strider growls low and soft, a warning, fur brushing Eddie's elbow as he presses close. Eddie brandishes the bottle more aggressively to back up his attack dog, but the wolf pushes in between them, standing on its hind legs to push Eddie away with his big paws on Eddie's heaving chest. The growl is a dangerous warning, but it's actually aimed at Eddie. He looks at Strider with what he knows is a very hurt expression. They'd seen something together, survived the night and morning together. Strider had kept him from going insane, kept him warm and present. And now the wolf was turning on him. Confused and suddenly alone, Eddie shifts, presses the bottle to the wolf's neck instead, but the wolf doesn't back down. Eddie! Eddie, it's Steve! He's cool! He's cool! A voice is shouting, sounding panicked. Eddie can't focus on it, though. The adrenaline and lack of sleep has him too on edge. Not to mention the leftover fear coiled in his gut from, nope, don't think about it. Eddie, it's Dustin. Look at me. That's Steve. Then, to the wolf, Steve, stop. The growl cuts off. Steve, what are you talking about, Henderson? It's that girl that lives across the trailer park from me. Eddie nods at her over Strider's shoulder. Because standing on his hind legs, the wolf is almost as tall as Eddie. No, man. The wolf. It's Steve. It's Steve. Drop the damn bottle. Officially perplexed now, Eddie lowers the bottle and backs up. What? Henderson, what the fuck are you saying? The girl, the redhead, doesn't look afraid, but the wolf turns to her, sniffing her all over, and when she drops to her knees, he bumps his head against her, putting his nose right where Eddie had held the bottle to her throat. I'm okay, Steve, I'm okay. She throws her arms around the wolf and puts her face into its neck. Okay, what? Seriously, what is happening? Eddie demands, sinking to the ground with his broken bottle. Robin Buckley, from Band, that Robin Buckley, says, so much, man, so much. She holds out a backpack by the strap, and the wolf takes it from her with his teeth, heading behind the boat with it. Eddie watches it go in confusion, but before he can ask anything, he hears a low groan, a drawn-out sigh, and then a zipper opening. What the fuck? Behind the boat, there's a bunch of scuffling noises. No one says anything. Henderson is grinning like a madman. The redhead and Buckley just look bored. And then, Steve fucking Harrington walks out from behind the boat in too tight jeans and a fucking polo shirt. You even brought me socks and underwear, Bucks. Thanks, Harrington notes, squeezing her arm as he walks past to grab Dustin's head through his hat, rattling it side to side before tucking the redhead against him for a moment. Yeah, and I'm scarred for life. You all need to make emergency bags for this kind of shit so I don't have to dig through your underwear drawer. She shudders, but Eddie doesn't get why, because he'd love to see what Steve has in his drawers. An unhinged giggle slips out of Eddie's pressed lips at the audacity of that thought, and Robin scowls, but he's pretty sure it's for the wrong reason. You don't know, Munson. There was so much color. I thought tidy-whities meant they were white and weird-looking, not tiny and, like, bright blue or red. Pretty sure I saw a pink and a teal pair, too. I need to wash my eyeballs. Steve starts to snark back at her, but Eddie needs some answers, because he's starting to spiral. What the fuck is happening? Eddie demands again, voice cracking. I'm a shapeshifter, Harrington says matter-of-factly, like he's not dropping a literal bomb in this dusty fucking boathouse. Shaking his head to clear it, Eddie asks, A what? A shapeshifter. It's a... I know what a shapeshifter is. I'm a nerd. I read nerd books. What do you mean you're a shapeshifter? There is no logical explanation for this. Of course, there's also not a logical explanation for, nope, don't think about it. Eddie shakes that train of thought out of his head, looking at Steve expectantly. Okay, short version. We've been battling monsters from an alternate dimension since 1983. In November of 84, there were these monster dogs that traveled through tunnels and rotted the fields. Yeah, Eddie actually remembers that. The local farmers were pissed and all blamed each other for contaminating each other's fields. So, part of our party was about to face all those monster dogs in Hawkins' lab, and some people in our benchwarmer party, he gives the girl and Dustin the stink eye, thought we should lure the demodogs away and give our people a better chance. Some of us, he points to himself, were unconscious for the decision-making part of that. The redhead punches him lightly in the arm, but then leans into him almost gratefully. There's a story there, but Eddie thinks it's probably part of the long version. Although finding out why Steve was unconscious seems pretty important. He'll get it later. Dustin cuts in, and Steve rolls his eyes, but allows it. It's a hive mind. We call it the Upside Down. We thought if we went into those tunnels and burned what we found there, we might call the demodogs away and give Elle, she has superpowers, and Will, Byers, do you remember when he went missing the year before? Time to do what they needed to do. Close the gate and burn out the Mind Flayer, respectively, and get back safely. The girl interrupts before Eddie gets a chance because, Mind Flayer? Like in Dungeons & Dragons? And superpowers? But he's too slow, and she's already talking before he even gets the chance to open his mouth. So we did. Only, it was sort of filled with these pods of spores. We had masks and goggles, but it wasn't enough. Maybe if we had a chemical wash and a stomach pump like they gave Hop when he got lost in there? Anyway, we think it was on our skin for too long. In our lungs and stomachs. She shrugs like it's no big deal when she says, We got infected. Eddie thinks about backing away from the word infected, but he figures if it's catching, it's too late for him anyway. Instead, he asks, We? Who? Me, Mike, Lucas, Max, this is Max, and Steve. Dustin says, and when Eddie's eyes go to Robin, Dustin jabs a thumb toward her and says, Robin didn't come in until last summer at Starcourt. At the same time, Dustin, Robin, and Steve say, The Russians. Eddie's not sure he wants to know that part just yet, so he just nods slowly. So, you're what? Demon dogs? Steve's voice is gentle. Not demon dogs. Demodogs, that's what the kids called them because of the demogorgons, are monsters. You'll know one if you see one. Can't miss a face like that. He shudders. We're wolves, though. Just normal, right-side-up wolves. Except we can shapeshift into humans, so I guess not that normal. He gives a little chuckle. Eddie giggles high and manic. Demogorgons? How do you know— Wait, shapeshift into humans, not humans who shapeshift into wolves? Steve sighs. Well, we don't know for sure, because there's no way we're telling the government bastards about us, and it's not like we can do lab testing on ourselves, but we're always wolves, even when we're human, so no, not humans. We have, special abilities from our wolf selves, and we still have them in human form, so... That's interesting, and maybe Eddie should have other priorities right now, but... Like what? I can smell you. Dustin grins like that's not either a very rude statement or a super fucking weird one. All the time. The scent of everything is so strong and it tells so much about a person. And I can hear things I shouldn't be able to. Like, I can hear your heartbeat. We're stronger than humans too, and we heal crazy faster in wolf form. I'm gonna deal with that later, Eddie mumbles, waving his hand around and trying not to process the complete lack of privacy he's been subjected to while Steve fucking Harrington apparently slept with him for 2 weeks without telling him. Why didn't you turn into, what did you call them, demodogs? Max and Dustin smile at each other, then at Eddie, and Dustin says, like he's sharing a great secret with Eddie, it's a hive mind. We're a hive mind, too. Kind of. We can't hear each other's thoughts, but we always know where the others are. That's how we found you. We knew where Steve was. And when we're in wolf form, we can communicate across distances. Just a little, because we're more animal than human when we're shifted, so it's like, safe, home, food, pack, danger. Not big, complex terms, more like ideas. Wait, you're connected with the monsters? Part of them? Eddie's brain feels like it might explode, and he still has no idea what this has to do with what happened to her last night. No, Max grimaces, looking disgusted. Just us, just the five of us, and we're more like a pack than a hive mind, because we didn't turn into monsters. We followed our leader instead of theirs. Before Eddie can ask for clarification, Dustin says, we think that after everything that happened earlier that night, we all trusted Steve to protect us, to keep us safe. There's a few seconds where Dustin seems to get lost in a memory. His mouth turns down and he gets quiet, but then he says with a sudden grin, see, Steve is good. So we think that when he shifted into something good instead of something monstrous, the rest of us did too. Wolves instead of demodogs. Max cuts in, sarcastically, which are probably actually demo wolves, but the boys refuse to change their name because they think demodogs sounds cooler. She snorts as if her tone doesn't convey enough how uncool that is of them. Snorting back at her, Eddie states, I'm sorry, I think I can wrap my head around everything else, except that. King Steve is good. Like, he's so good that he defied monster nature. Eddie laughs a little manically, even while part of him is reminded that Steve stayed with him this whole time when he could have left Eddie alone. Max growls low in her throat, Dustin too. Eddie scrambles back where he's sitting on the floor, and both kids immediately look sheepish. Robin pipes up, putting her arm around Steve's dejected shoulders. Listen, Munson, I had trouble believing it too, but Steve Harrington is the best person I know. He's here with you, isn't he? Her chin juts out defiantly, daring him to deny it. Steve cringes, and Eddie has to finally come to grips with, yes, Steve is here. He's been here for a few weeks. Being a fucking creep, apparently. Sorry about this. The king himself stammers and waves to the general this of their situation. Before Eddie can say anything, Dustin turns and tilts his head at Steve. Yeah. What was this about? I already told you after Dungeons and Doorknobs, I was worried, Steve defends, throwing his hands up in exasperation. Dungeons and Dragons, you know what it's called, and you could have figured that out in one night, maybe two, Dustin points out, and Eddie agrees but doesn't say anything. Why'd you go back? And why come to D&D? You went back again after, too, we felt you. Max saw you. So Eddie's not the only one who thinks that was weird. Good. I don't know, okay? Running his hands through his already messy hair, Steve sighs in frustration. Home alone was just Strider. Eddie's really nice. This, he waves to the leather jacket and the everything of Eddie. Eddie, who feels like he should be offended, but is really just not, because it's what he's going for. This is not what he is. He's sweet and kind, and I was trying to figure out why he wanted people to think he was scary. There's silence for a few beats before Steve continues. And I wanted to figure out why he hated me so much. Like, he mentioned me to Strider every single night, even if he didn't see me that day. I just wanted to know how I'd hurt him before so I could make up for it. Steve's cheeks and ears are bright red with something. Maybe embarrassment. It probably matches Eddie's because, fuck, He had talked about Steve Harrington to a fucking dog every single night. Jesus, how embarrassing. You and I are going to revisit this another time when I'm not still reeling from everything else, Eddie tells him, deciding that ignoring it sounds like a much better idea than discussing it. He clears his throat before turning to Dustin. I want to see it. Like, not watch it happen. I can't handle that right now, and if I'm getting this right, you need to be naked for it. Just go back there and do the thing, shift or whatever, and then come show me. Dustin looks only too happy to comply. He drops his own pack, which is bursting with what looks like emergency supplies like flashlights, a walkie-talkie, there's a compass dangling from it like the kid is some kind of Boy Scout. Eddie wonders if the kid has any snacks or something to drink, because he hasn't eaten since lunch yesterday, and he'd thrown up a few miles from the trailer last night. The kid scuttles around the back of the boat, where there are a few crates stacked on top of each other that must have given Harrington enough privacy to stand and put his clothes on. After a minute of the distinct sound of someone undressing, and then a sharp intake of breath, there's the sound of something pulling. Like when you pull a nylon rope tight around a knot. And then the sound of paws on wooden boards as a wolf bounds around the edge of the boat, barreling into Eddie. It's smaller than Strider, there's obvious youth in his face, too. And Eddie gets a pretty good look at its face since the wolf collides with him, licking his cheek and chin. Oof, Henderson, Jesus, gross. The wolf lets out a chortle similar to Strider's chuffing that sounds like a laugh, before pulling back to sit on his haunches. Eddie can get a better look now. Dustin's wolf is light brown and there's a patch of cream-colored fur low on his chest, underbelly, and legs. His tail is less fluffy but sweeps back and forth across the floor as he tries to stay still for perusal. Scratching under his chin, Eddie whistles and admits, "This is nuts. I'm jealous. Why couldn't something cool happen to me instead of that other thing?" Buckley scoots forward on her knees, petting gently along Dustin's back as the wolf lays down and rests his head on Eddie's thigh. The wooden planks of the boathouse aren't cold, but they're not exactly warm either. Too late now, this is where this is happening. Harrington, maybe you could tell them. He tries not to plead, but it doesn't sound like he succeeds. His voice is small, trembling even. I can try. I'm not sure I even know. It happens so quickly. Jump in if I get anything wrong. Steve puts his arm out and Max tucks herself under it in a way that doesn't really match her sarcastic attitude. Like she's not quite as tough as she's putting out there, but only Steve gets to call her on it. At lunch, in the woods, when Chrissy came to... His voice fades as he looks at the kids, like he's debating what to tell them Eddie does for a living. Drugs. She was there to buy drugs. Eddie perks up long enough to supply. There's a bit of fuck you in it, like he's daring Harrington to judge him for how he pays for food for him and Wayne. Because he kind of is. Harrington nods, though. Maybe he wasn't judging. Maybe he just didn't want to rat Eddie out to the kids. She was afraid. Not of you, but she was terrified of something. You made her laugh, took that away for a little bit, but when she walked away, it came right back. Like something was haunting her, weighing her down. You saw it? Eddie asks in a hushed voice. No, I didn't see anything. I could smell her, though. She was afraid. At the trailer, when she was... There was nothing there hurting her then, either. I think whatever it was must have been attacking from the other side. That does not make Eddie feel better, because from the other side means that something could be following him everywhere he went and he wouldn't know it. It could be there, with them, in the boathouse. But her fear at the trailer, Steve continues, it was so much, bigger than anything, and I've been around people who were afraid before. She was terrified of something. He pulls Max in tighter. It broke all of her bones while we watched, and then she was just empty. Dead. The last part is barely a whisper. Dustin whines and presses his nose into Eddie's side. Maybe he's aware of how fucking scared Eddie is. Eddie pets his head, the fur there downy soft. He's reminded of how soft Strider is, how strong, of how Strider had made him feel safe, and he feels off kilter without the right to touch Strider, Steve, anymore. We ran, Steve says, not looking at Eddie. I ran, Harrington. You were going to stay and fight, he admits, not looking at Steve. Running was the right choice. There was nothing to fight, Steve tells him, earnestly. There's a beat of silence. Then Max says, How are we going to fight a monster we can't see? And Eddie comes to the dawning realization that these people are planning on running toward the monster. Here he thought he was being rescued, but now he thinks he's being recruited. End of chapter 3.